Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of April 4th, 2016. April is upon us. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Good. How are you doing?
And good. Very well. I'm glad to hear. And we're happy to be joined by Christina Wilson, who's a project manager at the Engagement Lab of Emerson College. And she is here to chat about the topics of the week. So how you doing, Christina?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Good. So this past week, over the past few weeks, we've had several somewhat depressing reports. So last week we talked about Jim Hansen had just published a paper predicting that catastrophic things will happen before the, much on a much accelerated time scale if we don't take action on climate change. And then this week there was a second report, different people. It was a much more specific mathematical model about sea level rise. And DR, I will put it on you to give us the bad news. Tell us what this report was about and what it said.
Yes, it was a new study released in the journal Nature, prepared by Robert DeCunto of UMass Amherst and David Pollard of Penn State University. And according to the Washington Post, quote, according to the study, quote, sea levels could rise by nearly twice as much as previously predicted by the end of the century if CO2 emissions continue unabated. And according to the study, we could see oceans rising by close to 2 meters in total, more than 6 feet, largely because of the melting of ice in Antarctica. It could cause seas to rise more than 15 feet by 2500. So the study basically points once again to the urgent need to sort of cut carbon emissions. Joe Rome notes that that what is predicted isn't even the worst case scenario. What we've just mentioned is not even the worst case scenario, and that there's a severe risk of cities such as, quote, Miami, Boston, New York, and New Orleans. They may not have a plausible chance to survive by 2100. So it is a very grim warning.
And I think that what's special in about this report is the very accelerated timescale, right? He's mm-hmm. saying this is before, basically within the next 85 years, all this could happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Christina, were you going to say something?
I said that sounds very urgent and puts into a sharp point on why it's important for people to start getting engaged in activating their cities to, mm-hmm. to do something about this, both in the mitigation and adaptation senses.
So, Christina, we spoke briefly last show, about a project that you're on. But let's just remind folks that but put it in context. Boston is facing a 6-foot sea level rise. Now, that's not 6 foot higher where the waves roll. That means the water goes up by 6 feet, wherever you're standing, and runs inland much farther than it ever did before, putting much of Boston and much of Massachusetts at risk. So we need to plan for that. And Christina, what have you been working on recently that would help people plan for such an eventuality?
Right. Well, I've been working with the City of Boston and the Boston Harbor Association to engage the public, the wide public, in giving their opinions and sharing what the vulnerabilities are in their particular neighborhoods to be fed into the city's comprehensive master planning process that's going on, particularly around climate.
And the unique thing is that that's on a game, right?
That's right. Sorry about that. That's It's an online tool that allows people to have public deliberation while earning sort of points, social capital points or coins they're called in the game that you can contribute to local causes like your favorite school or community organization, player created causes. So while you're giving your input to the city, hey, you get a cash prize at the end for your favorite nonprofit org.
Well, so we better start doing that kind of stuff pretty soon, right? Because according to this article, which near as I can tell has, from what I've read, has a more precise mathematical model of the way the Arctic and Antarctic will behave, all those Greenland ice sheets and all that kind of stuff. And so the prediction is that the flooding could come much faster than we'd anticipated, right? And it's particularly a threat to Boston, right, D.R.? What do you got?
Exactly. And the New York Times also notes that the prediction of this study, quote, is roughly twice the increase in sea level rise reported as a plausible worst-case scenario by a UN panel just 3 years ago, unquote. And remember, you know, we've talked recently about, you know, Jim Hansen's recent study and Jim Hansen, among others, warning that a lot of the stuff that comes out of the IPCC is sort of toned down and way too conservative in terms of the estimates, that the risk is much more severe than what even the IPCC reports. So it gives you a clear indication of the risks here. And again, you know,
forgive me, dear, what I saw is basically saying, if this report is true, it puts into question whether or not the Paris Agreement was nearly aggressive enough.
And in fact, I think that the New York Times story says that that if this report is accurate, the Paris deal is nowhere near strong enough. And it's interesting, you know, we referenced Joe Rome's analysis of the study earlier in the week. He noted the 10th anniversary of Time Magazine doing a great report saying be worried about the climate crisis. And he basically said that, you know, 10 years later, we need to dramatically expand media coverage of this issue. This is an issue in terms of the amount of, you know, lives that are at stake. This issue should, in terms of media coverage, it really ought to trump everything else if you think about it.
Right. To coin a phrase. But so there you go. There's this. We'll put up a link to that article, Sea Level Rise. Of course, the thing of it is, you get, at least I start to get numb to it, because you talk about sea level rise, oh, it's going to be terrible, This article seems to be saying it's going to be terrible in the not too distant future. So there you go. So speaking of being aggressive, DR, it's my understanding that a bunch of attorneys generals, now the attorneys generals, right, they're the chief law enforcement officers of the different states in the union, and 18 of them got together to talk about fossil fuel companies, or at least that's what I thought they talked about. So tell me, what's the story with this coalition of attorneys general?
Yes, there's a coalition of attorneys general representing at least 15, actually about 19 or 20 states. The main thrust of the initiative is to support more efforts to expand clean energy. These 19 attorneys general have filed briefs in federal court, in the U.S. District Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit, supporting the Clean Power Plan, which is obviously being challenged at the D.C. Circuit level. And also as part of this reporting, it was noted that Massachusetts Attorney General Maura Healey and Claude Walker, who's the Attorney General for the U.S. Virgin Islands, are reportedly launching their own investigations as to whether or not ExxonMobil committed fraud, stemming from those reports from Inside Climate News and the Los Angeles Times about ExxonMobil. You know, ExxonMobil's own scientists recognizing the reality of human-caused climate change, but ExxonMobil's PR department saying something else.
Right, and just to remind everyone, I mean, the illegality in quotation marks there is sort of like the tobacco companies, right? If a company, either it's an oil company or a tobacco company, is selling a dangerous product, but telling its shareholders that everything is fine, not to worry, then there's this SEC stock market issue that all of a sudden the attorneys general get interested in. I think that's where the Exxon in particular is. I mean, they have been effectively misleading their stockholders for 20 or 30 years, and that's not a good thing to do, right?
And in fact, Vice President, former Vice President Al Gore, who was at this press conference held by Attorney General Eric Schneiderman of New York, made that explicit connection between what the fossil fuel industries are doing now and what the tobacco industry did back in the day.
So there you go. There is progress on the front of the Exxon case, and basically the coalition of, I don't know, law enforcement people and states getting their proverbial act together to at least begin to deal with the issue of climate. So I guess the other aggressive thing that's floating around out there, DR, is the question of whether or not Massachusetts can become fully energy independent. And again, let's rewind again with a little bit of context. The most recent report suggests that Massachusetts, because it has no fossil fuels within its border, there's no coal mines, there's nothing, Massachusetts sends $20 billion a year out of state to buy gasoline and coal and natural gas. And, of course, if we could keep that here with renewable energy, it would be a $20 billion stimulus every year to our economy. So, DR, tell me, what did Environment Massachusetts tell us this week about Massachusetts might do there?
So there was a new study entitled We Have the Power, 100% Renewable Energy for a Clean, Thriving America, prepared by Environment Massachusetts, which basically makes the point that Massachusetts and the rest of the country can have 100% renewable energy through such measures as offshore wind and solar power, and therefore we don't need to expand fossil fuel infrastructure anymore. In the news release accompanying the release of the study, Environment Massachusetts noted that this is something that should be taken into account as elected officials in Massachusetts ponder whether or not to sort of pursue, you know, new natural gas pipelines or pursue hydropower, what have you. We can go away from those towards truly clean energy sources that don't involve, you know, the potential risks of either natural gas or hydropower. So it's a very comprehensive study and much, very much worth reading.
Yeah, and I would just add to that that, you know, in addition to the issue of carbon neutrality and energy production, there's a specific a question about that posed in the Community Planet Climate Smart Boston platform that we were talking about a moment ago.
Really?
And people can give some opinions on that. And, I really encourage people to advocate for these issues and make their voices heard to officials who are listening to input that they can give on a platform like this.
Yeah, I mean, it's super. You can do it, you know, as they say, from the comfort of your basement, right? You can get online. This is an online game. And I think people... You know, people need the opportunity to express that stuff without having to drive 2 hours, you know, and make a presentation. Right? So I think that the BostonCommunityPlanet.org website is the place for people to go. It's a good thing. So let me get my last point in, the thing I'm tickled about. For those of you who are interested in electric vehicles, there's been some news lately. You've all heard of Elon Musk, who is the guy, the brains behind the Tesla car company, and the Teslas are beautiful cars, and they're 100% electric. They're really, I think Mr. Musk has done it right. But the long and short of it is, he is about, I think this week, is going to announce a 200-mile range electric vehicle for something like $35,000, which could be a game changer in terms of electric vehicles and have significant impact in rejiggering the transportation market to a clean energy like electricity. On top of that, the speculation in the press says that GM, which of course killed the electric car back in 1999, has finally gotten around to building something called the Bolt, which is also a 200-mile range electric vehicle, which I think puts this sort of electric vehicle clean energy into a practical range where people can actually use it, right? Mm-hmm. DR, are you going to buy a Tesla? Christina, are you going to buy a Tesla?
Sure, would love to.
Emerson College doesn't pay me quite that well.
Yeah, I know. I know. I can sit and gaze fondly at them. Anyway, so that's this is quite a week. We got sea level rise coming, but we've got attorney generals fighting back, and Massachusetts can with confidence go 100% renewable. So that's the good news of the week, right? Well, let me remind our listeners, they can check out the links to everything we talked about at the blog. It's massclimateaction.net/blog, and that's on the MCAN website. You can also find this podcast on our Facebook page. It's /massclimateaction. Check it out. Please share us with your friends so that they can learn about us as well. Of course, you can listen to the show directly on your smartphone using apps like Stitcher or TuneIn Radio. We're at this point, we're on almost all podcast aggregators, so please seek us out. You can find us on iTunes. All you have to do is search for Massachusetts Climate Action. Please subscribe to us there. So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it is our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. So, DR, thank you for being here.
Thanks.
And, Christina, thank you so much for being here. It was really a pleasure talking to you.
Same here.
So, thanks to everyone for listening, and we'll see you again next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.